Well, first off, I want to thank everybody for being here to give people like me a place to come and actually figure my life out, because I needed you people. And before I get started, I want you to know my name is John Cunningham. I am from Columbus, Indiana, and as of today, I've been clean and sober and serene for 5 years, 6 months, and 4 days. I kind of want to start this over if I can, because this ain't about me. So this time I want to introduce myself again, but when I do, I'd like for you all to yell at me at the same time. It's about time, because I need that. So my name is John Cunningham, and I've been sober for 5 years, 6 months, and 4 days.
It's about time.
Because indeed it is. It's about time. All right, well, I guess a good place to start off is, you know, how all this happened to me. And I think, how many of us in here are parents? Absolutely. I think as we peel our onions back, we tend to, a lot of times it goes back to the parents. And that's true in my story. I think no matter how hard we try, I'm a dad myself, I have a 13-year-old son. And I try my best to do him right, lead him right, to do the best I can. But I think sometimes as parents, we make mistakes and we don't mean to. And this goes back to my father. And you know, my father, he was a great man, real loving man. He loved my mom. Boy, my mom loved him, and I got to grow up in this environment, and I seen a lot of love as I grew up. I remember the friends and the laughter, and I remember coming home from school, and I used to remember as a 10-year-old, I felt lucky to be walking into the environment that I was walking into. But my dad also made a big mistake during all this. He was a truck driver. He was gone for 2 weeks at a time. He worked another job when he came home, so any free time he did have, what I seen my father doing was sitting on the couch with his acoustic guitar, sometimes with friends, sometimes not, covering songs, sometimes writing his own songs, but he always had that beer in his hand. He was always drinking. And I remember poker nights. You know, I would be in my room playing Nintendo, and I'd hear this laughter, you know, coming from my door, and this happiness, these good times that I was starting to associate this stuff with how you'd be happy, you know? And I know my father didn't mean it. He was a good guy, but this is what he was teaching me. Now, I think a lot of us were equal in one big way, and that way is pain. I know pain's different. I think every one of us in here tonight are here because we once hurt. There's something that probably hurt us. And for me, it was my dad's death. And I'm going to speak on this, and because it's very significant in my story, and bear with me, if I cry, I'm sorry. But I remember this night very well. It was probably about 8 o'clock at night. My dad was watching, me and him was watching an IU basketball game, is what we did. And they were playing Syracuse this night. And I think we won, I don't remember if we really did. But I go up to go to bed, and I remember my dad saying, "Hey, get back in here, boy." And I come in there, and he's like, "Hey, you gonna tell me you love me?" And I was like, "Yeah, I love you, Dad." And he said, "I love you too." And I had no idea that was gonna be the last words I ever heard from my father. That night, or that morning, my sister, she comes in, she runs into my room, and all I hear is frantic. And she says, John, get up, something's wrong with Dad. And I remember I have a dead sleep, and I wake up and think, "Why? What do you mean something's wrong with Dad?" She says, "I don't know, just come in here." So I run down the hallway, and I walk into the kitchen, and there's my father laying on the kitchen floor. I remember my mom over here, she's on the phone, and she's frantically trying to call 911, and she can't do it because she's too distraught. My sister didn't know what to do because she was too young, and I'm about 14 at the time, and I remember in school they always said, you know, be calm in these situations. Be calm. So I did. I took a deep breath. I went and took the phone from my mother. I called 911. And I'm like, "Hey, I think my dad's having a seizure. Can you get over here?" Because he was there. He had this foam coming out of his mouth. He'd done urinating himself. You know, it was a bad sight. I had no idea that my dad just suffered a massive heart attack. And, you know, I think they say drugs and alcohol is a symptom. And I think that was the first time my mind was truly altered, because the pain that I felt from that, I wasn't the same. You know, I wasn't the same at all. But the moment before my dad died to the time after are two totally different stories. So I think this is the very first time my mind was truly altered, and everything else that I speak about until my recovery was symptoms of this pain. And when I first got into this program, is there anybody else in here that's cross-addicted? Good. Because at first I didn't know if I was an alcoholic. You know what I mean? And the more I got to speaking, the more I got to tearing the onion back, the more I realized that I was an alcoholic first. I had a big problem with drinking, and it was the original disease that I suffered from. And how do I know that? Well, I did what I seen. You know, I'm in this pain, and I associated dad drinking with happy times, so I start drinking to get happy because I'm hurting. And I didn't realize it at the time, you know, that's what I'm doing. I'm drinking to get rid of this pain. But it's exactly what I was doing. And during this time, I commit, you know, my first burglary at 16 years old. And it was on my mom's house because when my dad died, she had taken me and moved me from Edinburgh to Brown County. So I didn't just lose my dad. I lost all my friends, too. And I'm drinking. I got about a half gallon of vodka in me. And I go burglarize her house while she's asleep. You know, an alcoholic would do that. Somebody messed up in the mind would do that. Not somebody thinking straight. I ran away about three times as a juvenile. And I think the big kickers, you know, I mean, every time I drank tequila, I ended up in a fight. You know, you might be an alcoholic if you do that. And I ended up in group homes, foster homes. And it seemed like no matter what happened, alcohol was the consistent. It was what I was doing. And for a long time, you know, from about 15 to 20, I just remember this roller coaster of life getting good and it getting bad and it getting good and it getting bad. And it's real blurry. You know, I remember getting kicked off the Southwestern baseball team because I decided to drink. And I got kicked off the Edinburgh softball team because I decided to drink. So I had an obvious problem. My grades were suffering. And this went on until I was about 21, 22 years old. And then I met my ex-wife. And I met her at a place called Cracker Barrel in Edinburgh. And, you know, this is when my life really began to change in a different way. We drank. We drank together. We partied together. We had big parties out in Brown County, kegs, all that stuff. You know, it's what you're into. And I think when you're doing that with a significant other, it gets a lot worse. And we did. But what I didn't know about my ex-wife at the time was she was taking, you know, methadone and pain pills for about 6 months before she ever even told me about it. So I just think we're drinking, having a good time when she's doing some other things on the side. But when she comes and tells me about it, you know, I decided to try it for the first time. You know, and I don't want to sit here and I'm not placing blame on anyone. My choices are my choices. I understand that. But, you know, my whole life changed at that point. And I remember my ex-wife also, I'm going to go back just a little bit here. She's the first one that identified me as being an alcoholic. I will give her that. Because I remember we're leaving home from work one night. We both worked at Cracker Barrel. And first thing that happened, I remember taking a drink of this beer. And it was probably a second, right? It was Sapporo. And I remember the sensation running through my quads and my legs. And I'll never forget it. And it was like something was being relieved in me that I'd never felt before. And I remember thinking in my head at that time, uh-oh, that wasn't right. Because it felt way too good. And I also remember, it wasn't long after that, she looked at me and said, John, do you think you could not buy that 12-pack tonight? Because every night off work, that's what I did. I'd buy the 12-pack, I'd go home, and I'd drink it. And we had a pool table, we'd shoot pool, and we'd hang out with friends. But I always had to take it to the next level. You know, I'm drinking to get drunk. I ain't drinking to hang out. And that continued until she introduced me to the pills. And then I also remember why that story of the legs was so significant. So I remember, right, she gave me the morphine and the methadone. I remember that same feeling happening in my quads. I remember taking this morphine, and it was like I felt that again. And I put that together quickly, you know. But I didn't know this was the addiction that was progressing in me, the beast, the monster that's getting stronger and stronger and stronger. Because my life hadn't went to shambles yet. You know, I was still hanging on for dear life. It ended up to my very first arrest. You know, I was probably 26, and I got in real trouble. Started burglarizing houses, and, you know, I burglarized my grandpa's house, and I got pulled over, and they found the stuff in there, and I go to jail for the first time, and of course, you know, when I'm in there, I'm like, you know, I'm not going to do this again. You know, I'm sure everybody's heard this story from somebody in jail, and maybe I meant it, maybe I didn't, I don't know, I don't think I did want to, but I remember thinking I had a real problem. I knew then I had a serious problem. And we all have those enablers in our life. And I was able to talk my mother and my sister and my girlfriend at the time to buy me money, to bail me out of jail, get me a lawyer, who got me a 10-year all suspended sentence, and I was back off to the races. And I dodged a bullet. That's how I felt then. I didn't have to learn anything about myself, and it didn't take no time. The first thing I went back to was the drinking. I remember working over at Harrison Lake Country Club, and I turned on this classic rock music, drinking my beer, thinking I was really changing my life because I'm not doing the pills no more. Just getting drunk by myself all the time. I'd go to my mom's house and sit out there on her front porch, turn on this sappy music, and just get drunk. That's what alcoholics do. I'm an alcoholic. And that insanity continued because there it was again, the alcohol first. What followed right after that was the pills. Suboxone was something that was newly introduced. I knew it didn't show up on drug screens, so I started taking Suboxone. And then it wasn't no time after that, I'm back off being an addict. And for me, that was a really bad thing. Probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 years after all that, you know, I started, because you know how it works, it's a circle. You know what I mean? I'm an alcoholic, drinking, I'm taking the pills again, now I'm burglarizing the houses again. And on my final arrest, I had a group of people that had gotten arrested before me. I had no idea that they had given a really hard statement on me. The Brown County Police Department had put a tracking device on our car, and I didn't know that. And this particular morning, you know, I go out to do what I always do, go burglarize the house, grab what I can as quick as I can, get up to Indianapolis, and get drunk and get high as quick as I can. And I remember we did the house, and we got away, and I'm on my way to Indianapolis. I think everything's fine. And I look behind me, and there's cherries and berries everywhere. I mean, everywhere. I'll never forget the sight. I felt like I had murdered somebody. And they roll up on us. They pull us over. And I remember they get out with the guns drawn. They're yelling at me, the passenger, to get out, keep my hands up, to walk backwards to them. They put me down on my knees with the gun to my head and arrested me. And the homeowners were with them. And as they arrested me, the homeowners walked by my car, and all I seen was disgust in their eyes, and I deserved it. I mean, they hated me, and I felt it. And that's the experience, right? I mean, because it's hellish, and I went through hell. It was awful. I didn't want to be that person. There was nothing in me that wanted to be that. I was taught better. I was raised better. And I knew better, but this addiction that I had never dealt with was killing me. So I get into the Bartholomew County Jail, and I remember the first meal I had. It was the pizza, and it was disgusting. And I remember the smell, the room, and all that. And I knew something had to change. I knew something had to change. And at this point, the enablers had begun to go away. My sister was no longer talking to me. My mom was no longer talking to me. I had no girlfriends there. My ex-wife had given up on me. I barely seen my son. So I'm almost to the point where I have to face myself. And I'm about 6 weeks into this jail sentence, and I'm facing, I mean, at the time it was 50 years. My plea bargain was 30 for a year. And I'm on this night of my surrender, I go down to the phone, and I call up my ex-girlfriend, who was still taking my phone calls at the time. And she says, "John, I got something to tell you." And I said, "Okay, what's that?" And she said, "Well, I'm pregnant." And me being the crazy guy, I'm like, "Okay, yeah, it's cool. We can do this. You know, I'll get out in about 15 years. I got you." You know? And she's like, wait, hold on. She said, "It might not be yours." And I'm like, what? What do you mean it might not be mine? You mean you're cheating on me and I'm out here running, getting heroin, drinking? I'm like, oh, man. And I stopped. And I heard it. I heard myself. I'm like, man, that's crazy. Of course she wouldn't cheat. Why wouldn't she? I bet loving me was hard. So remember, I hung up the phone. I didn't even yell. I didn't even get angry this time. And I walk up the pier to the cell. And I think the block had sensed something was going on. They left me alone. I remember sitting up there in that jail cell. And there was no magic. There was no big spiritual experience that I had. But I knew I had two choices. I had only two choices. I could either get off that bed, and I could go jump off that tier, and I could just end this now. Or I fight and I surrender. I think sometimes, man, we don't know how strong we truly are until it's really the only choice we have. And it was the only choice that I had that day. And I did. I surrendered. I at that point, I quit thinking I knew anything. I started listening. I picked up my first NA book in that jail and read it from front to back twice. And I began to learn from my environment. See, like, recovery almost began for me without me even really knowing it was beginning. I knew I was searching something different. And I remember people always telling me, "John, you don't belong in these places." I'd be in the jail, and I'd have inmates saying, "You don't belong here. Something you just don't belong here." But I found myself there all the time. I was in military prison. I've been in 6 county jails. I was in a group home and a foster home. I kept finding myself in these awful places, and there had to be a reason why. You know? And I remember the day I figured that out. And it was in the same jail cell. And this guy goes down, gets back on the phone, he calls his girlfriend. And instantly, all I hear is, "Where's my money at? Wipe the money on my books." And I'm like, man, why is he yelling at her? And he yelled at her, I bet, for 30 minutes. And it hit me, man. It hit me. He was selfish. He was selfish as he could get. And all he cared about was himself. And I realized it's exactly who I was. That I was selfish. And all I ever cared about was me. At that point, all I cared about was my drug, my drinking. It was me, 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 me. And it was getting me in more trouble, more trouble, more trouble. So at this point, I had surrendered. And I figured out the core of this disease, that it's selfishness. You know, and so, and I had two more really wild experiences in the same jail cell going through this time, because I'm facing 30 years, and they're not coming off of it. I believe with all my heart I'm doing 30 years. I go to this change of plea hearing, and I come back twice with the same plea bargain. They were fed up with me. And I had to get to a place of acceptance for me to ever get happy. And the moment I just dealt with it and said, you know what? I can't sit around this jail cell and be unhappy. I have to accept this is the truth and move on. And I ended up getting happy. I ended up doing people's laundry at night. And what I would do was, you know, I'd take donations as payment. And when somebody came in that jail cell without anything, I'd go give it to them. You know, and that's what recovery do. You know, it's service, right? And and then the miracle happened. I'm in my last change of plea hearing, and the lawyer told me that morning to expect no less than 15 years. Absolutely none is suspended. I'd got my sister, my mom, and my ex-girlfriend on the stand. They made every excuse in the book for me, like always. I could count on it. And I got up there, and I tried things my way so long, and I'm facing Judge Monroe, I'm in the open 20. I got talked down to that. And I looked at him straight in the eye. I'll never forget it. And before they even asked me a question, I said, "Sir, I deserve every single year that you give me." It was the scariest thing I ever did in my life. And I go back down to the podium, and 14 is all I heard at the time. And my lawyer starts hitting me. "Did you hear that?" And I said, "Yeah, man, I'm doing 14 years. You know, it's better than 15, you know." He said, "Did you hear the 7 suspended part?" And I was like, "What? 7? Are you serious?" Because I was in there, I was facing, I violated a 10-year suspended sentence for burglary with another burglary. It's not good. And I just hit the lottery. I don't know how many people, I mean, there was parts of me that were dead that came back to life then. I got life back. You know, and in that moment, that gratitude is something that's with me every day that I wake up. I feel it. I wake up and I'm grateful just because I'm here, because I shouldn't be. I should still be in prison. No doubt in my mind. And I go back to cell block, and I'm celebrating getting 7 years, and people are looking at me like I'm crazy. But you see this guy over here happy about getting 7 years, but they didn't understand what I'd gotten back. And then I'm off to prison, and my prison experience was the best thing that ever happened to me now. And I can tell you, I don't know who's been there and who ain't, but there's recovery there. You get what you want from anything, I think. You know, and I wanted it. So I go in there looking for anything I can to be different. And I get involved in this thing called therapeutic community. It's a 9-month, they call it inpatient rehab. What they don't tell you is you have to seek out your own recovery there. And I did. I found about 30 of us out of about 2,000 that would sit down every night at the tables like this, but the long ones. And it felt like we were trying to crack this code together, right? But this is where NA and AA started getting really heavily involved with me, because they were in the prisons. And I started going. And I started hearing the outsiders like you talk. I hear the inmates talk. And I got to hear all of these different stories from all around the state, you know. So many different views. It was the neatest thing I've ever been through in my life. And I started reading books. Outside, not just the NA book or AA book. I started reading books like The Power Now and The Traveler's Gift. I don't know if anybody else reads, but I still read to this day. I read anything I can. And my mind started to flip. I could feel it. I could feel it. You know, something's happened here. Man. This is working. Started working those 12 steps. Worked them twice in prison. Still work them every day today. And I started to find out who I really was. You know, what I really was all about. And I was happier than I've ever been in those walls. I'm in prison. I don't even feel like I'm there, because I'm working for something. I'm finding purpose. And I'm really grateful for that. I started taking leadership roles in there. Things like they would have us facilitate our own recovery groups. And I chose to do that. And that's scary in prison, because, you know, most people don't care. I had to get up in front of people that I knew didn't care and still cared. And I figured out how to do that. And that was a pretty neat experience. I took the head position there. I had to, every Wednesday, go over like the behavior of the prison pull bar and stuff like that. And that's a scary job, man, because they look at you a little different. But I handled it with a lot of grace and learned a lot about myself. On May 14th, 2014, I'd earned 2 time cuts. The therapeutic community gave me 6 months. When I went to the IREF, I ended up getting a business technology certificate, gave me another 3. I walked out of prison on May 14th after only 2 years and 9 months. And that's incredible. It's incredible. And I had filled out an application while I was in prison for McDonald's in Brown County, and I was at work that Monday morning, and I have not missed a day of work since. And that's recovery, man. That's the kind of mindset you have to have. I had nothing. I didn't have clothes that fit me, because I don't have a picture, but I weighed about 80 more pounds than I do right now. I was huge. So when I got home, my clothes were larges and extra large. I didn't even have clothes at first. Thank God my mother, who was not wanting to enable me, started going to Al-Anon meetings. And you know what they tell you in Al-Anon. Don't let him come home. Don't let him come back home because you don't know yet. Thank God she believed in me anyways and let me come home because I needed that. And I thank my mother for that. But she believed in me, but she really didn't have much reason to believe in me. After that, I get home, I go to my mom's house, I start going to AA meetings, I did everything out here that I had done in there. I was talking the talk, I was walking the walk, and I knew who I was, and I was going to be different. I also walked to work in the snow, in the freezing rain. I didn't ask for rides, this is my fault, I earned it, and I walked it, and I enjoyed it. You know, I also upgraded to a bicycle eventually, and I started riding my bike, and I didn't mind it, you know, because I was taking responsibility for me. It felt good, you know. I didn't rely on people. And then, you know, eventually I ended up getting my driver's license and a car and a home, and I got all that stuff eventually. I've gained a lot. I've gained a whole lot through this program and through recovery and not drinking and not drugging. I've gained a home. I got a car. Got a driver's license that I've not suspended. I got a bank account. I got a savings account. I got a good wardrobe, a job. Even got a pretty good credit score now. But this ain't what recovery is about. If you're here and you're looking to recover those kind of things, you're thinking wrong. Because it's not about me. Recovery has never, ever, ever been about me. Recovery is about relationships, and it's an inside job. You know, to me, recovery is about people like you, David, who gave me a chance to play softball. And what that does for me is, you know, and people don't understand, is when I'm at shortstop and I catch a ground ball, I miss that back when I was a teenager because I was out drinking. It's a part of me that I'm recovering. When I hit the home run, and I'm so excited, and somebody's like, "Why are you so excited? I can't get it. I just shouldn't be here." You know, recovery's about you, Jason. You're my best friend, man. Can't believe I'm here with you, bro. Proud of you.
Thank you.
We've done a lot together, you know. Recovery's about you, Brandy. Myself to you causes me to go deeper into who I am, and I'm learning even more. I'm learning where I need to be compassionate, forgiving, effort. But I think more importantly than any of that, recovery is about all you all that started there. There's people that people like this don't even know that helped me. They got me through it. And I'm so grateful for these people, and I'll never meet them. They gave me a place to recover, just like you guys give newcomers to recover. And we need you. And I'm thankful for you guys, but it started with you first. I have figured out the more that I give myself, it don't matter if it's to my job, to a softball team, to my family, to a stranger on the street, the more I get in return and the more I learn who I am. And who am I? I'm John Cunningham, man. I'm an alcoholic. I'm an addict. And I'm so grateful to be alive today. And before I go, I want to say one more thing. In the beginning, I was talking about the parents. And my father did make a mistake. He did. But he also taught me how to love. He taught me how to wear my heart on my sleeve, and I know it was that love that I seen there that enabled me to love myself and love you all until I found out who the hell I was. And I want to sit here in front of you all and thank my father for who he was as a man. And that's all I got. questions?
All right, before we get to Q&A, I'm sure we've got a couple.
Oh, man.
It's going.
It's underneath my cup. That's why I put it underneath there. Just want to give it to you, buddy. As you guys might know, I met him when I was 18 years old at Chili. That's when I first got my first serving job. I'll be 33 in December. So, I mean, we've been through a lot. Okay. Bonnie and Clyde, the two dudes, right? Q&A time.
Do I stay up here?
Yeah, they're going to ask you. They're coming. They're going to fly. All right.
I'm Doug. I'm an alcoholic.
How you doing? Doug.
Wow. Thank you for being a part of what keeps me clean and sober on a daily basis. That was truly moving. And you told a lot of our stories, too, because we are so much alike. I am the disease. Drugs and alcohol are a symptom of the disease. And until I treat the disease, the symptoms will continue. Thank you. I really, really appreciate you being here. And I want to take this opportunity. I'm sorry I didn't catch y'all's names because I was going to get in these. But there's some phone numbers in here, the guys in the group. And nobody held a gun to anybody's head to put their numbers on this, and that's because we want you to call us.
Thank you.
We didn't stay clean and sober by ourselves. It was a group thing. It's a we program, not an I program. So please use those phone numbers. Give us a call because you keep us sober. So, thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Hi, fellas.
John, thank you so much for coming in. And what I kept hearing all through your journey that kept coming back to me, and that was talking about selfishness, and we all are, and how you turned that around and you just gave so much emphasis on unselfishness and giving to others. And at the same time, applying that to yourself, the hardships you went through. I'm sure some of your comrades that you were in prison with, whatever, probably think of you today. At least I hope, you know, hope that they do. But I remember your journey as being one of selfishness and most importantly, the unselfishness.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks,
Phil. Thanks, Phil.
My name's Danny. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
John, thanks for making sure your experience. It was very humble and very honest. I tell you what, you know, they say hope is hearing other people's experience, and you've definitely done that, carrying your message. It was a good message.
Thanks, Tim.
I'm Keith, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, it seems that you always hear what you need to hear at these meetings, and tonight was no different. I've been working on a little bit of this selfishness thing lately. I've been talking to a few AA buddies about it. I recently had my girlfriend move in with me, and, you know, this program's taught me to keep my mouth shut. But there's also some inner workings that, you know, a guy gets used to living by himself that... Some of that sharing stuff isn't coming as easy as I thought it would, although that's never been talked about inside of these rooms. But, you know, I've been working on that a lot lately, too, and hearing you talk about it, like Danny said, gives me hope. You know, where I was when I came here was a whole different ballgame than I am today, but it still shows me that I need to work on it. And hearing you reminds me of that, too, you know, and I know that when I hear other people that show examples of doing that or working on it or continue to work on it, reminds me that no matter how long I'm around, I still have to do these things. And I appreciate hearing what you had to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
My name's Gail, and I'm an alcoholic. And that was an excellent talk. You know, they say there are miracles in these rooms, and you truly are a miracle. And I really... You gave an excellent talk, and I could listen to it again right now. You know, it was so moving to hear you talk about. You know, we all go back to like the childhood, and we think back to like things our parents did, and all of that, and then where life took us. You know, and I mean, it's so great to know that. You know, it took you down that far, and you've come this far, and only five and some years, you know? I mean, thank God for the few, like the few that you said in prison, there was only like 30 out of 2,000. Thank God for those other 29, right? Because, you know, those are the winners. You know, they say hang with the winners, and you did that even when you were in prison. And I'm so glad you're here tonight. Thank you. Thanks, Jason. Good job. Thanks. It was good really good to have you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
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 I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
John, I really appreciate the story you shared today. You know, our stories are all different, but I think we all experience that same desperation when we finally surrender. Come in these rooms and start to learn a little bit about ourselves and to know exactly what Doug said, that, you know, this is the disease and we treat it with the symptoms that are the drugs and alcohol. I remember the starts of that and how difficult those starts are because, you know, I'm a great liar. I lie to myself all the time. And to really accept the truth, admit what's wrong with me and know that it is me. That was difficult to do, but today I'm so thankful it's happened in my life, and I certainly appreciate you and your story and letting us know and let everyone know that there is truly hope within these rooms. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks.
My name's Andy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Andy.
Andy.
John, it was really a lot of strength, a lot of honesty, a lot of power, a lot of impact. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, sir. I'm Julie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Julie.
John, do you feel like you're a little bit on, like, America's Got Talent? There aren't any questions to answer. We're just scoring you right now. outstanding. I mean, goodness gracious. And all that's just God speaking through you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Julie. I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
Thank you so much for speaking. I'm able to hear that. A lot of that reminded me of myself. Some of it. Keep doing what you're doing. You're touching a lot of lives.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
down. I'm an alcoholic.
And I can't
get one. So this is for you, Brandy. A schedule of our meetings around here, which you probably have if you're from Columbus, and just all of our phone numbers, all the women's phone numbers, and like Doug said, none of us had to put our numbers on there, but we'd all appreciate and welcome you to call us if you ever want to. That'd be great.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That's good.
My name's John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
Hey, John.
I got there at the end. I got kind of a little nervous, but I also want to say, you know, my sister here, you know, I forgot to mention her. And, you know, I'm proud I can give you a brother to be happy about, finally, you know, because I know how bad it was for you, too. I think it was harder on you than anybody. And I watched her heart break a lot over me. And I'm sorry, I forgot to mention you. So,
it's all right.
I just wanted to say that.
Hi, my name is Jason. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.
Hey, Jason.
Just wanted to say, you know, I'm glad I talked to that one girl that was only a couple months sober, because in that process, I got to find out, you know, someone made a statement that there's basement people. I know we're in a basement, but let's forget about that. Okay, there's basement people. That there's your level four people, you know, consistency, inconsistency, and then there's your addict people. You know, that help you rise to the occasion, you know, and these people are, you know, the addict people, okay? They help you rise to the occasion. The basement people always drag you down, okay? Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to say, I almost forgot it, my wife. I tell you what, man, I was sitting there talking to her, I think it was last night, and man, I kid you not, I said, don't you look at me differently now? And she just said, I do, but I'll never forget. And I was just like, kind of, this is kind of you guys too, right? They don't ever forget. You know? I thought I could help her forget, but they don't. You know what I mean? And I thought that was profound, that she would always have that memory. But she said she doesn't look at me that way, but she sure as hell will never forget what I did to her. And I was like, that's how deep I hurt her, right? The pain. So, you know, that's another reason why I strive so damn hard to be the person that I am today. You know? But I just wanted to share that. I thought that was profound. All right.
Thanks, Jake.
Hey, you're welcome. Anybody got anything else?